Our next case is 13-0186, State of Ohio versus Corinne Cotalupe. Sorry. Mr. Burke.
May it please the court, my name is Joseph Burke. I represent the appellant, Corinne Cotalupe. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. A motion to suppress cannot state a more detailed factual basis than the underlying bare-bones police report, which constituted the only evidence available to Cotalupe at the time she filed her motion. Under the Ninth District's interpretation of Schindler, it requires a motion to state a more detailed factual basis than the underlying bare-bones police report, and requires more than notice. And I would say, Justices, this court got it right with Schindler. Schindler was about notice, and we merely asked the court to reaffirm its holding in Schindler. Pursuant to the Ninth District standard, defendants will never be entitled to motions to suppress and will never receive due process under the law. It's a very high standard. And if you look at the facts of this particular case, where Cotalupe did track the bare bones police report as best she could. And I put in my brief, I put in the actual report that was in there. And it's interesting, the information that's in there, but really more interesting was what information is not contained in the report. We tracked implicitly and explicitly what the officer did not do, what he failed to state. And given the fact that we have no video here, and given the fact the only evidence in this case was the police report and facts that were contained within the mind of the arresting officer, Cotalupe did the best she could with the facts that were available to her.
The circumstances, you say there was no probable cause to pull her over.
It's correct.
She was speeding.
It's correct, allegedly.
When the officer approached the vehicle, the strong odor of alcohol.
That's what his report says, you heard.
Okay. And so what you have at that point, he said, she said type of a situation?
Well, Your Honor, in Xenia, where a defendant has demonstrated a warrantless search and seizure and asserted lack of probable cause, the prosecution has the burden. I think in this case that unless and until I have a hearing to cross-examine the officer, these are basically allegations in a report. And if we're not going to convict on police reports, are we? We want due process. We want an opportunity to cross-examine, to be heard.
Okay, and the evidence that was presented, the field sobriety test results, et cetera, were available to your client, correct?
Well, they were, Your Honor. What was not available is the manner in which he instructed the FSTs and how he demonstrated. His report merely said, I explained and instructed the following tests. So there is no way I can divine a set of facts from looking at that report as to whether the officer, the manner in which he administered them, instructed. I can't do it. I can't fabricate facts. And that's why I put the NHTSA regulations in the brief and I put in the report. There is no way. It's an impossible standard. But that's not my standard because Schindler's notice. All I have to do is put the prosecution and court on notice. And we certainly did that. The Court of Appeals opinion did not even address, the legal and factual basis as it relates to the stop that we allege in our motion, to the probable cause to arrest OVI, to Miranda statements here. And I think that, the Ninth District and other appellate courts have drifted from Schindler, and they've created this higher standard. And again, the Supreme Court has not really spoken on Schindler since its decision, but we have these courts now coming up with a standard. And I think ultimately what this court has to measure is the particularity of notice requirement that these appellate courts are talking about with really a fundamental constitutional right, and that's due process under the law.
So are you saying that any time there's a motion to suppress filed, the defendant should have the opportunity to have a hearing? I mean, is that the basic thrust of what you're arguing here?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I think you have to comply with Schindler. You have to state legal and factual basis with sufficient particularity, put the prosecutor on notice. So
you need us to look at this particular case and say, in your position, that there was enough to trigger the hearing?
Absolutely. My case, the state argued in their brief that if the actual Schindler motion were before the Cotalupe court, it would not pass muster. I may even argue that if the actual Schindler motion was before the Schindler court, it would not pass muster. So, no, you have to comply with Schindler. Schindler strikes the correct balance between notice. We're talking about sufficient notice. In my case, as a great illustration, this isn't a challenge to an FST where I do, you know, you would have to have specific notice of the issues, but mine's just a challenge to a stop and the field sobriety test. And so they obviously had notice because they subpoenaed the officer for the hearing.
So the question that the Ninth District comes up with on particularity, they say no particularity. What, in your view, was what satisfied that point in your view?
Well, in terms of the probable cause to arrest,
that's pretty general. No probable cause to arrest. If we're talking particularity, what did your motion say that would satisfy it?
The officer failed to instruct, conduct, administer, evaluate the FSTs in substantial compliance with NHTSA. That the FSTs were administered under duress, under difficult environmental conditions, that the officer's analysis was biased. We certainly put facts in there, but I am limited by what I had. You look
but
at the report.
That sounds like a form pleading. It really does. That you just file in every one of these cases.
Well, Your Honor, I would say this is not.
Would I be wrong that in your office you've got this form and you just every DUI like this you just pull out certain paragraphs and say he didn't do this in conformity with the rules?
Your Honor, I would say that this, respectfully, this was not a boilerplate because I could have merely listed every NHTSA violation, and I didn't do that. It was honed in, but it was based on whatever.
What specifically did your client tell you that led you to believe that he didn't do the tests out on the road correctly?
Well, I will tell you this. What my client did tell me is she goes, Joe, I believe I passed the tests. She's not trained in the administration of FST, so she had no opinion on what instructions need to be given. Again, on her NHTSA, if the instructions are not properly given, demonstrations, then the results are skewed. But I certainly have a right to a hearing. I mean, it's fundamental due process.
So you essentially want two trials in every DUI case?
No, I want to comply with Schindler, and when I comply with Schindler, the prosecution has a burden, the burden of proof to come forward whether there was probable cause.
You made an allegation, didn't I just hear you say, that there were adverse weather conditions?
Well, I said under, difficult environmental conditions.
What were they?
That particular night? I do believe it was, I can't remember. Actually, there was no reference in as to the weather in the police report, Your Honor. I do remember it was late
dark.
At night. Yeah, there was no reference as to what the weather was in the report.
But, so. I mean, you could have said, it was dark, it was rainy, and there were no lights along the road. You didn't put any of that in there.
I do not believe it was rainy that evening, Your Honor. No, I didn't put it in there, but, again, we're not talking about the best notice. We're talking about sufficient notice.
Well, I have to agree with Justice Pfeiffer's observation. It seems like this is standard operating procedure. You say it's not boilerplate, but these are pretty generalized complaints about the officer's performance.
Well, I think, on Arzinha, once I trigger those things, and prosecution has a burden here. But justices, again, there's no video. We have a bare bones police report. The Ninth District standard, I cannot, it's an impossible standard for me to meet. I would be fabricating facts if I said specifically the officer did not do this, but I've done enough to trigger the right to a hearing for them to meet their burden of proof here.
Counsel, and that's, how long did you have before you had to file your motion?
How long did I have in terms of
a deadline? How many, 10 well, days, 14 days, how much time?
Well, generally, it's 35 days, but, in Elyria Municipal Court, it's kind of a lax standard, so I filed it in 53 days. And, again, the prosecution didn't challenge that window.
But when you did get the state's motion, and they said we didn't get sufficient notice, you then filed a supplemental. You made a supplemental filing with more detailed information. Would that not indicate that because those your original motion and the supplemental motion came so closely together, that you probably could have included that additional information in the original motion?
Well,
is that not correct?
Your Honor, if you really look at the supplemental, I didn't add any new facts. I stated in there no less than three times that because there's no video, I cannot ascertain the manner in which she did the FST. So I really didn't add any new facts. And also, during that timeline, I called the prosecutor the minute I got her reply, and I said, listen, this is what I'm challenging, but I don't really know since there's no video. And, you know, indeed, we have a troubling chronology that occurred here in terms of they waited 6 weeks to file the response the day before the hearing without, you know, within 5 hours of the response, the court denied my motion without a hearing. So I don't think I could have. I mean, I'm being perfectly honest with you that this is a bare-bones police report, but I complied with Schindler.
How would you respond to the state's argument that, you know, you could have gotten a statement from an officer in that time? How do you respond to that?
Well, I'd say there's no mechanism in the criminal rules. I would say that if I did contact an officer, it's doubtful that he'll admit a constitutional violation. As a matter of practicality, it will never work. Okay. And also, when they talk about whether your client is a resource, well, you know, Mr. Burke, your client's a resource for the FSTs. You know, officers are trained to look for indicia of alcohol consumption. They're trained in administration of FSTs. They're trained how to write reports. They're trained how to testify. Defendants oftentimes have never been in this situation before. They're terrified. They're scared. And they're not experts. They've never been trained in the administration of FSTs. So that's a red herring. And also this argument about formal discovery, if I'd done formal discovery. The only evidence was the police report. That was it. I got it at the first pretrial. There wasn't anything more that ever could have been produced in this case. So, it's notice. I met the Schindler requirements. Schindler got it right in terms of...
You know, going into Schindler, it was a breathalyzer. There were 9 particular things that were set forth in the affidavit, from things such as the supervisor wasn't present, the statements were obtained incorrectly. The machine wasn't calibrated correctly. I mean, it was very specific. So it's very different. You have a very different situation here when you don't have the standards that are written as they were in Schindler that somebody can tick off. So your reliance, I think, might be a little bit misplaced here.
But I think a distinction, Your Honor, has to be made between a legal and factual basis when you're challenging a stop, substantial compliance of FSTs, and the breath test. Because with the stop, all you need is the testimony of the arresting officer and or his report. It's not as complex. But when you're challenging a breath test, and by the way, this is not a breath test case, then yes, yeah, they would have to bring in a number of people, the person, the senior operator, the person who conducted the RFI, if it's a data master, a person, a custodian of logs. They would have to have notice of all of these issues to bring in the proper evidence. So I do think you must make a distinction, as in Schindler, which was a breath test challenge, where they should have more notice because they have to prepare more, but not when it comes to challenging a stop or FSTs. It's one officer, and the fact that they subpoenaed the officer shows... demonstrate that they had notice of what was being challenged here.
Mr. Burke, are you just seeking a response from the state to your motion? Is that what you want, or do you want the court to actually conduct an evidentiary proceeding on your motion?
Absolutely. I want the right to conduct a hearing, Your Honor.
And if the court finds that there wouldn't be merit to it for one reason or another, it has no discretion to simply summarily dismiss it.
Well, I would suggest, Your Honor, that the trial court's order is subject to a de novo standard review because...
Well, there was a review by the appellate court, and at least one member of the appellate court determined that there should have been a hearing or should have
right.
been a responsive pleading filed.
Correct.
So how do we mandate that every prosecuting attorney must respond in writing to every motion to dismiss in every... a DUI proceeding, or how do we mandate that a trial court shall conduct an evidentiary hearing on the record with all witnesses present every time a defense lawyer files a DUI? I mean, how do we rate something like that?
Well, this court has done that in Schindler. just reaffirm Schindler. Schindler strikes the correct balance.
Well, then what you're asking is error correction. If we've already done it in Schindler, then your argument is that the trial court committed error by not following Schindler. The appellate court addressed Schindler.
And I agree, and the appellate courts are coming up with different standards, the slight and general standard out of the 12th
Pardon
district.
Pardon me, please.
There's appellate courts coming up with different standards which are modifying Schindler. The general and slight standard out of the 12th district is a modification of Schindler and saying that if it's a generalized motion, they only have to respond in a generalized way and the burden's fairly slight. So I think
that's not before us. That's not here. They haven't said this is a generalized motion.
No, but I cited those cases for the proposition that at minimum, Cataloupe was entitled to a hearing, if nothing else, to develop a more specific factual basis upon cross-examination. That's those State versus Johnson, and it's been adopted by some other courts. And I think this court needs to say, no, Schindler got it right. This is the correct standard. And review some of these decisions from these appellate courts, which is changing Schindler and making an impossible standard here.
Well, counsel, let me just ask you one question, because I'm looking at one of the allegations. You say that the field sobriety tests were not conducted in compliance with the national standards. Isn't there an argument to be made that in your motion to get a hearing, you have to say how they departed from the national standards?
Your Honor, I would say that they failed to administer the field sobriety test in substantial compliance. Beyond that, beyond no video, beyond the fact that what the report says, again, from the officer, is I explain and demonstrate the following tests, there is no manner for me to do so. So I should be able to develop that more specific factual basis if you want to accept the Johnson case, at least on cross-examination of the hearing. But here we're talking about, you know, denial of due process, not giving defendants the rights. And I'm
so
saying...
So the absence of a video is a denial of due process?
Absolutely not. But when the absence of a video, if I have a video, I can certainly corroborate what the officer did in conforming with the NHTSA guidelines. In the absence of a video, my job is much more difficult. And then when we add to that a vague police report, then...
NHTSA doesn't require it either, does it?
Pardon me?
NHTSA doesn't require it either, does it?
Doesn't require neither...
A video.
No, NHTSA does not require, but it makes it a lot easier to review and corroborate what the officer did or did not do. And again, besides the report, most of the facts were in the mind of the arresting officer. So, you know, what the Ninth District is doing is making defendants prove a negative to establish facts solely within the mind of the...
Well, not necessarily within the mind of the officer. He's trained to administer these tests. There's standards that are set forth by NHTSA. Your client performed the test. There's no dispute on that. And he said, based on the standards of the NHTSA test, from the HGN test to the one-leg stand test to the other tests that were administered, she failed. Correct?
He did say that, yes.
Okay, so you know what she was asked to do, you know what the content of the test was, and you know what the results were.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, I'd say no, I don't know what she was asked to do. I have no idea how he instructed those FSTs. We have no idea whatsoever whether they were in compliance with NHTSA. And if they weren't in compliance, then the results are skewed. And so, you know...
So you're just simply asking for the right to cross-examine that officer. Is that what you want?
Well, the right to a hearing, and certainly, yes. And by the way, the report, up until this point in time, it's not facts. It's an allegation in a report.
It's evidence.
Well, it's...
It's evidence.
I've never had an opportunity to cross-examine the officer, so I don't know if what's in there is true.
Well, you would at trial, would you not?
Well, yeah, but we don't convict on police reports.
So that gets back to the first question. You're saying you wanted to have a hearing.
Yes.
And that's really what you're arguing here.
Yes.
If you look at Rule 47, it seems to suggest if there's a motion with a basis that's in the motion, you're entitled to a hearing unless the court has determined... It need not be held. But you're saying as due process, you're entitled to the hearing if you filed the motion.
Well, I'm not saying in all circumstances. I say if you comply with Schindler and state a factual and legal basis with sufficient particularity to put the prosecuting court on notice.
And going back to Schindler, it was a basic stop, And the real argument there was whether there was probable cause. And what happened was the attorney that was filing the motion threw in a lot of boilerplate, right, talking about those nine grounds I mentioned earlier. So in a sense, it was almost like there was too much in the Schindler case that was presented, and the state was saying, we don't know with particularity what you're challenging here. And so the court's looking at that particular situation. Right. Here you have the opposite, where the argument is you didn't state enough.
Right. And I would agree with you that a breath test, you should have more particularity so they can prepare.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. Morgan.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Toni Morgan, representing the state. Before the court today is an issue faced on a regular basis by prosecutors like me, by defense attorneys, and by the courts, and almost without fail when either drafting a motion to suppress or when responding to one.
Counsel, was the response that you filed, was that boilerplate? Was it specific to this motion, or is that a response that you would file in every case?
It's similar to a response that I would file whenever we get a motion that appears to be boilerplate and that lacks sufficient particularity as to the legal allegations and as to the factual allegations.
But in your motion, you specifically reference the challenge that the defendant failed to state with particularity the allegation regarding the field sobriety tests, correct?
Correct.
In the motion. But in the motion, the defendant addressed more than just the field sobriety test. There were also challenges to probable cause for the stop, the sufficient reasonable grounds to effectuate a stop based on the facts of the report, officers lacked probable cause to arrest, and the final was on the violation of the Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. So in absence of your motion addressing these other grounds at all, shouldn't the trial court at least have held a hearing on these other grounds?
There's no rule that the trial court has to hold a hearing on the complete motion. There's nothing in Criminal Rule 12 that requires an evidentiary hearing every time, and Criminal Rule 47 gives them the option. And both parties, myself and the defendant, had filed motions, and the court can rule on the motion
without a hearing. Does Schindler require it?
Pardon?
Does Schindler require it?
Require what, Your Honor?
A hearing.
Schindler requires a hearing if you meet the requirements of Schindler. And Schindler had looked to Criminal Rule 47 for its particularity requirement, and it looked to Xenia v. Wallace for notice of specific legal and factual issues. And then based on that, and in Wallace, the burden doesn't even shift to the state to prove anything unless those... We're not required under Wallace to anticipate the grounds or guess what the grounds are. So there would be no burden on the state.
Well, counsel, isn't that a problem, though? Because I think the burden does shift once the motion is filed. It seems to me that when the defendant says that the field sobriety tests were not conducted in substantial compliance, this trial court is saying that lacks particularity. I don't know where particularity would come from, since defense counsel was not on the highway. There is no video and there is no record. So once they have filed that constitutional challenge, doesn't the burden shift to the state to say, yes, we did, and how do you do it without a hearing?
What the state is suggesting is that looking at Wallace and looking at Schindler, that the burden would not shift because there's not sufficient particularity that puts the prosecution on notice of what the issues to be decided are.
But counsel, did you even, my point though is you didn't even challenge the grounds related to the stop, the arrest, and self-incrimination. That wasn't even challenged by you in your response. So are you saying that the court just sua sponte looked at the motion, and even though you only challenged the lack of particularity on one of those grounds, sua sponte said there's no need for a hearing because there's a lack of particularity as to all of the grounds?
Well, on the appellate level, they did look at probable cause, and that was their conclusion. With the judge, I don't know that her entry indicated the entire thought process. My motion was directed at the field sobriety test in particular because for prosecutors, that's one of the most troubling places where you need to know when you go in what those issues are so you can properly prepare for those issues.
To go back to, I think, where Justice O'Neill may have been headed, you know, my concern is how would you know, though, how would the ordinary defendant know whether the field sobriety tests were done correctly? I mean, I wouldn't know. How would this defendant know and be able to communicate to the lawyer, this is what I think the officer did wrong? How is that possible?
Well, one of the things that Schindler requires is that there be a legal basis and a factual basis, specific in both. As far as in Schindler, the legal basis came from the form motion in Ohio driving under the influence law. And I would urge that likewise, the NHTSA standards would be the basis for their legal challenge. There are facts that the defendant has, and that the defendant is the only one who has them. The defendant knows what kind of conditions were there that day. The defendant would know exclusively what kind of facts personal to her might affect her performance on the test. The defendant knows what she said to the officer.
Counsel, I think that's all very helpful, what the defendant knows. I think what Justice French is asking you is, what do we know? And the question that I have is, were those tests conducted in compliance with the national standards? How do I know they were?
The way that you find out is when you file the motion with sufficient particularity, that entitles you to your hearing.
And that's what we're here for today. You're saying your position, and apparently the Court of Appeals decision, is just saying they violated the standards is not enough in the motion to get a hearing so that the Supreme Court of Ohio can be assured that the Constitution was protected on that highway.
Just a mere conclusory allegation, and not just the Ninth District, State v. Gosden in the Seventh District had said, if you just say they didn't do the field sobriety test in substantial compliance, that there's no burden placed on the state as to that issue. You need to be more specific.
What particularity could Mr. Burke have put in his motion in this case?
Can you repeat that, please?
What particularity could Mr. Burke have put in his motion in this case?
Well, as to the legal basis, he could have looked at the NHTSA standards, and this would have been a discussion, I presume, with his client. This is what they should have done, and a conversation with her. From your recollection, what did they do? And what do you recall? I'm not asking that the defendant prove anything, just that he lay out the allegations that the state has to prove so that the state isn't prejudiced when they go into the hearing.
But counsel, isn't it a situation here that it is particular enough for you to be on notice of what's going to be argued or what needs to be done at a hearing? It's not a situation where, for example, the underlying fact is undue harassment or an argument that there was exigent circumstances or no exigent circumstances. You're being told that what is being challenged here is the way the testing was done. And isn't that all that's needed?
I think I would disagree with that, having been in several hearings where you were faced with these bare allegations. And when you get to the hearing, there is questions from all over the NHTSA manual. Questions, well, if they only did two tests, what's the percentage of reliability for that test? And do you know what all the types of nystagmus are? So in Kale, I believe it was the Seventh District case, they ended up with 55 different allegations regarding field sobriety test. And it's nearly impossible to anticipate everywhere that they might go.
So it's a discovery issue, are you saying, that the state needs more discovery on these motions, and that's why you can't have a hearing?
Well, when there is specific legal basis and factual basis, I think that makes improves discovery. If you look even at Schindler's original motion, one of the allegations, the number 8 allegation, was that the operators were not certified. The fact that the officer or the defendant attorney can look at those certifications. That was really a discovery issue, even in Schindler. In Horner, they had a hearing, and because it had never been alleged in the hearing that the batch solution certificate was expired, it came up at the hearing, and they didn't have it at the hearing.
What about in this case? Would you hold them to the standard if you want to talk particularity? Well, are you saying he should have had in his motion that the heel-to-toe test was performed in high heels? Is that something you think is required to be in the motion?
If that were that would be a legal and it would be a factual allegation. If that's what his client tells him, then that's something that I know specifically where they're going. I need to know. Then I know how to question my officer and elicit the proper testimony at the hearing. I see I have a few minutes left. I would also indicate that the reason sufficient particularity is required is not only, as I indicated, improves discovery, because when you know specifically what it is they want, you can get it through due diligence or through discovery. Wallace indicated that the prosecution must know the grounds of the challenge, and they said very simply to prepare the case. And that's a simple statement, but there's a lot of preparation that goes on. You need the proper documents with you. You need the proper exhibits. You need to do the right research. And in Horner, something like the batch solution certificate could have been at the hearing. So it improves discovery because then you know what is needed to go forward. It also improves judicial efficiency. If there is a bare allegation that's not entitled to a hearing, it doesn't have to go forward, and you don't end up with situations where the defense or the prosecution is surprised, where the court is not prepared to rule on an evidentiary issue, or whether there needs to be a continuance. You're going to end up with less appeals, and all of the information that's needed to conduct the hearing is going to be there, it's going to be present.
So if we agree with your position, how do we resolve this case?
Well, I find myself arguing exactly the same thing, that Horner needs to be reaffirmed, but as interpreted through the eyes of such cases as State v. Gosden, the 7th District case. There they looked at the three sort of pillars in this issue. They looked at Criminal Rule 47, they looked at Wallace, and they looked at Schindler. And there they decided that on the field sobriety test, that portion of that particular motion was not, it failed Schindler in two ways. It wasn't legally sufficient, and also there was no factual basis that with allegations or facts that tied the allegations to the case.
What do you want us to be writing in terms of when a trial court judge, because we're going to look at 300 trial court, municipal court, county court judges in Ohio who are hearing these matters and getting these motions, and how do we tell them when the hearing is required? I mean, what words do we use to tell them you have no more discretion, just conduct an evidentiary hearing?
Well, I don't think that they wouldn't have any discretion. What I would say that the court would follow and construe.
Pardon me, please?
I would say the court would follow and construe Criminal Rule 47, Wallace, and Schindler, and the wording might go something like, before the burden to go forward with evidence passes to the prosecution, the defendant must state the motion with particularity in both its legal and its factual basis, sufficient to let the prosecution and the court know what the issues and the defendant know what issues rather the defendant expects the state to prove and what facts support the defendant's issues.
When Justice French asked you the question then about the number of issues raised with Mr. Burke's motion and you only responded to one of them, wouldn't there be some notice to the state that Mr. Burke would like a hearing on the others that you hadn't responded to?
I specifically looked at the field sobriety test because, as I indicated, that's more troublesome to the state. It's a broader topic, as sometimes breath alcohol content allegations are. It's a broader topic, and it's more troublesome to do. In point of fact, when they say there's no probable cause, and that happens routinely, it almost never doesn't happen. When you're talking in terms of stopping someone because of their driving, it is a less troublesome matter for the prosecution. So when I responded to the motion, I was responding to the piece that was most difficult for the prosecution to respond to, where you don't know what the issues are.
So are you saying that even if the prosecutor didn't respond to all the issues in the motion, the unresponded areas, if they're not pled with particularity, according to the Schindler, the court can just take notice of that and fold that into the consideration of having a hearing or not?
I believe that the court has the discretion to do that. Yes, Your Honor, I do.
But you're saying the state did not have enough notice when there's this allegation about the field sobriety test. You know who the officer was. You know there's no video of what occurred. The state can't just talk to its witness ahead of time and know what a hearing would, what issues would arise at a hearing?
The NHTSA manual is a good inch thick, and there's several pages that describe all the steps the officer has to take.
You can't find out from the officer if he followed what he was supposed to do?
We can, Your Honor, but if I wait until the hearing before I find out what the problems are, it's too late then. That's why it needs to be in the motion with some specificity so I know what it is that they want me to do so I actually can prepare. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Burke, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
I do acknowledge the Court of Appeals did not address the stop, probable cause arrest, and the statements obtained. It's true. What we're talking about is burden shifting from Xenia and Wallace. They've shifted the burden from the prosecution to establish probable cause to defendants with this particularity.
Mr. Burke, Ms. Morgan is arguing that with a one-inch thick NHTSA manual, you file a complaint that the test didn't comply with these standards, she could conceivably have a two-day hearing covering all of the elements that are there. Is that what you think we should be requiring when a motion to suppress is filed?
Well, first of all, they're expecting the defendants to know that one-inch thick NHTSA manual, but it's not one-inch thick. But what I'm saying,
the point is not the thickness of the manual, but the thoroughness of the preparation that the prosecutor has to conduct in order to accomplish what it is that is at issue.
Your Honor, when you're talking about challenges at FSTs, it's not that complex. It's the testimony of the arresting officer and his report.
And is that stated with particularity in your motion to suppress?
Absolutely. Absolutely it complies. There's legal and factual basis setting forth that he did not comply, did not instruct, conduct, evaluate. I think under Schindler,
You're presuming that, okay? You don't have any information from your client that they weren't done in accordance with NHTSA guidelines.
Well, my client is not trained in the field sobriety test, but
your client didn't give you any information that I was made to do it in high heels or I had to wear flip-flops or you know, it was difficult for me to walk because there was, you know, gravel and debris all over the... You don't have any of that information, right?
Nor do we have any facts that they were, Your Honor. That's why we have hearings, to cross-examine.
You talked to your client to get some facts for underpinnings of these allegations.
Let's talk about the police officer's report. Did he state or she state with particularity how they administered, advised, and then tested and the results of each test?
The only statement was I explained and demonstrated the following test. That was it. So we have no idea how he demonstrated, instructed, or administered these tests. We have no basis. I cannot define a set of facts under those circumstances.
He did not give any detail as to the onset of nystagmus or anything like that.
No, he gave the results, but he didn't tell me how he instructed them to how he demonstrated them. There's nothing in there. So I would say that I ask this court to reaffirm its holding, reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals, and remand this case. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn court?
All rise.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.